Introduce tonight's Essanon speaker. I met her 5 years ago when she came into the program, and she has been an inspiration to me and to others for how she has embraced the program, all the tools, and a lot of service. So I've been inspired by her because seeing her work her program as she does has help me understand why I'm in this program and has shown me what can be done when you embrace all the tools. So it is my honor to introduce my friend. I love her, Janelle S.
Hi, I'm Janelle Essanon. I was born with a sunny and happy disposition, dancing any chance I got. Over the years of my life, my dance became more grievous and sorrowful and isolated. Having lived with multiple sex addicts over the course of my life, not to mention multiple losses of family members and two best friends, my sunny nature was replaced with anxiety, resentment, and the illusion of control. Through working the Essanon program, I rediscovered my natural ability to enjoy happiness, joy, and freedom of spirit. Before this program, I had broken tools that kept me enslaved to my shortcomings of judgment, victimhood, and self-abandonment in the form of perfectionism mostly. What was I like before? I grew up youngest of 9 kids. My father was an alcoholic and a sex addict, though I didn't have words for it back then. On the outside looking in, we were a happy and musically talented family. And it was my mom's goal to make sure we looked upstanding to neighbors and friends at any cost. We had no shortage of secrets, and she took many of those to her grave. I suspect from what her childhood friend told me that she was a victim of incest from her uncle. But my mom never divulged the abuse of her childhood. My eldest sister was married to a man who had pinup posters all around his house, setting an example for his 2 young sons, also mistreating my sister, who was completely devoted to him. Or I would never be a pushover for a cheating man. My older brother was a prime suspect in the sexual abuse of my 2-year-old nephew, whose mom, one of my sisters, she was number 8 and I was number 9, so we grew up together. She was my first qualifier when I was around 7, which I didn't come to until I came to this room. She also struggled with mental health, and I put myself in the role of keeping her from hurting herself. Eventually, we both lost that fight, and she passed in 2001 at her own hands. The biggest tension in my family of origin came in the way of faith tradition. About half of my family believed one way and half the other, though looking from the outside, you might not see any difference. Volatile arguments about religion would be commonplace, and I got that message very early that however I believed would betray half of my family. The spiritual abuse complicated my relationship to my higher power, making it feel dogmatic and punitive, which I wanted no part of. So in my mid to late 20s, I decided to keep any of that talk out of my life completely. These family secrets weighed on me and led me to a suspicious state of mind. My relationship with my depressive father was one-sided. I was there for his comfort. My resentment with my unaffectionate mother was a constant in my youth. She would triangulate with me and my dad, among other family members. So I became the peacemaker, the fixer, and the clown, chipping away at my sunny state, creating in me an anxiety I wouldn't meet honestly until I came to this program. The tone was set for me to distrust pretty much everyone. My family of origin primed me for my marriage to a sex addict. We were madly in love. From the very first meeting, we were madly in love. Though I resisted for fear of the grief state that I was in. My best friend had just tragically passed 4 years earlier, and my dad had just passed like 4 months before I met him. My resistance was futile. And we married a year after in 1991. Within the first 3 years, it became apparent that I was competing with his fantasy world, and I was determined to come out the winner. As it says in the Green Book, I believed I was not worthwhile and lovable. Instead, I had to work for that love by being the perfect partner. My perfectionism manifested in the way of staying thin, dressing a certain way, and doing what I needed to do to keep him interested in me. I was especially sensitive to criticism. This affected all my relationships, and I would cut people out of my life for the slightest infringement. With my spouse, I was constantly striving to help him. By giving advice, really, I was domineering, demanding attention, and raging at him when he refused to cooperate. I lived life in deep denial and dishonesty. I was not open to very much at all. I put on a front that nothing could hurt me. I did not show my vulnerability. I tried to control everything in my world, including those closest to me. I looked at them under the microscope. I lied to myself that I could change my spouse. The problem lied with me. I had a healthy marriage. Hadn't we been head over heels in love? Rarely did we spend time apart in those early days. Rarely did we disagree. Or if we did, I quickly adjusted my opinion to match his. And when a glaring dispute arose, often in regards to my stepson, I would shut down my voice and stew in my resentment, only to explode in rage at the worst time. My self-abandonment was so much a part of me, I didn't really know who I was. Acts of cowardice manifested in my inability to look at myself with truth and compassion. I either puffed myself up by talking down to my spouse and many other loved ones, or I berated myself so badly that I had no idea what healthy boundaries even looked like. And I used alcohol to numb that shame. I thought that once I had found sobriety in 2001, I was living in integrity. How wrong I was. When it came to sharing my feelings with a higher power or trusted friend regarding living with a sex addict, I was too ashamed and proud. Hadn't my behavior been worse? And some of my female friends dismissed my concern, saying things like, "All men do that," or "Get over it." I believed that guilting and shaming my spouse into stopping his behavior was sharing my feelings. I had surrendered, or so I mused. I didn't snoop. I only got angry when I actually found evidence of his habit, even though I intuited what was happening way more often than I had discoveries. But I was actually engaging in behavior that perpetuated the dance of addiction and codependency. Old tools like denial, obsession with the sexaholic, covering up the problem, isolation, rage, and manipulation. Those are all from the Green Book. For more than 20 years, I carried this self-blame that my own misuse of alcohol, my own sexual behavior as a tool for manipulation, had broken my marriage, and it was on me to be the fixer. Here's the thing. Knowing why I was a certain way didn't change one iota of my behavior. What happened? One day, about 4 months into the 2020 shutdown, I was transferring my data from an old computer to a new one. I came across a text chain that rocked me to my core. I always knew about the porn, but this was evidence of his progression. With staggered disclosure, I learned that he had been seeing prostitutes for at least 5 years. And this recent one he had seen for some time, even developed knowledge of her personal life, and clearly had an affinity for her. All that we had been doing to stay safe from the virus became a joke to me. Not only was my life being risked by this world pandemic, my body and soul were in more peril than I could have imagined. I was powerless, and my life had become, it was beyond unmanageable, really. I noticed the dates of contact and noticed that they had coincided with significant dates in our lives. The death of his mother, the birth of our grandchild, the day we got home from a 10-day spiritual retreat. How could this betrayal happen on occasions that I considered bonding and unifying? Looking back now, I see how deep my denial went and how much I wanted to believe that I could just will our happiness into being. It was actually the opposite. The more I played God, the worse things got. Eventually, I came to understand that I couldn't really fault myself for things I didn't know. But that would come with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Because I was familiar with recovery, it didn't take long to find an Essanon meeting, less than a week from discovery. I strangely felt some relief that I wasn't crazy, and something was blocking my ability to have an intimate marriage I longed for. A side note, we both told all our family members. It's not something I recommend, and we are still feeling the damage caused by that action. Also, it wasn't all on me. What a concept. And with that concept came a deep rage that my fellows let me wrestle with in those early days. No one advised me. They simply listened, empathized, and shared their experience, strength, and hope. I could be restored to sanity as long as I turned this over to higher power, who I called Spirit. I wish I could say that I never turned that rage onto my spouse, but boy, did I. In our separation, I found new ways to be suspicious and accusatory. Columbo had nothing on me. Thankfully, my first sponsor was willing to work the steps with me almost immediately. I threw myself into service so I would show up for myself. I chaired my first meeting 6 weeks in, which helped me feel a part of the group, which was not an easy task in those days of online meetings. What I'm like now? After 5 years of commitment to the Essanon program, I have found my happy dance. I still need reminders when there's not enough communication from my partner, when I'm driving and someone on the freeway breaks the rules, when a family member behaves in a way that reminds me of my old tools that I used to implement on a daily basis. Developing a relationship with my higher power was next level from 20 years prior when I found sobriety. So many of the slogans sounded trite and dismissive to me, so I had to choose carefully. I realize now they are like little poems of sanity when I'm feeling alone. Keep it simple, and one day at a time calmed my nervous system and prevented overwhelm. I didn't have to buy into anyone's belief system, and I relied on my fellows respecting the obstacle of refraining from the discussion of any religious denomination. Compulsive lusting respects no particular religion. Therefore, our program is designed to help us regardless of our various beliefs. This has been vital to my recovery. I love the distillation of the 12 steps in a word for each step. Step one, honesty. Step two, hope. Step three, surrender. Step four, courage. Step five, integrity. Step six, willingness. Step seven, humility. Step eight, love. Step nine, responsibility. Step 10, discipline. Step 11, awareness. And step 12, service. In working the first three steps, I addressed my honesty, hope, and surrender. The truth was that I was powerless over this situation, and it was not manageable by me, the manager of things. Only higher power can breathe life and healing. In that surrender, I can face the fear I've had at looking honestly at myself, stand in my integrity, and have the willingness to let change happen. I started connecting the dots that my own human frailties, step four, brought me to this state, and owning them and releasing them to HP, step five, could see me through. Steps four, five, and six gave me the humility and compassion for myself that I did not know I needed. Wasn't my partner the offending party? I knew enough about recovery to know that if I didn't own my part, I would keep repeating the pattern. And at that time, I was dancing, should I stay or should I go? So that uncertainty of the state of my marriage inspired me to work these steps for me and whatever the future would bring. Step 7, 8, and 9 offered the opportunity to make amends to myself. How seriously I needed that. I spent a lifetime harming myself in very creative ways. Steps 10, 11, and 12 are my daily exercise and keep me and my recovery healthy. Perfection is a myth that sends me down the road of anxiety, shame, and paralysis. And so I do daily inventory, I connect with higher power, and I meditate. And I have service to others. I love acronyms, so I'm sharing some that have helped me refrain from acting in a way that isn't aligned with my program. One way to stand in my integrity is to think. Is what I'm about to say thoughtful, honest, intelligent, necessary, kind? If not, maybe I can just journal, meditate, or call my sponsor. Another slogan I like, it's not an acronym, that helps me is say what you mean, don't say it mean, only say it once. I used to think saying it mean repeatedly, just like my mom did, would be more effective. My natural tempo is fast staccato. Some of you have seen me in the fellowship room, and you know what I mean. So I like to get stuff done. A great reminder for me is pause. Postpone action until serenity or sanity emerges. When I find myself in a state of getting it done, I know I'm not surrendering to my higher power. I can live by the example of my power, not by the power of my example. Instead of my old tool of obsessing on the addict, I can use the acronym DETACH. Don't even think about changing him. That goes for everyone else in my life who I think I might have a solution for. Their issues are between them and their higher power. I've resigned my role as fixer, mostly. My spouse found recovery and we stayed together, but the thought of him relapsing sends me straight to fear. Fortunately, I've stayed around long enough to see fellows stand in dignity, integrity, and grace when they walk through that challenge. The acronyms fear everything and run, or face everything and rise, and another is fear can be false evidence appearing real. I heard a story that cows are so afraid of storms, they run away from them, and so that prolongs the time in the storm for them. But bison run into the storm, and that shortens their time in the storm. Being here in these rooms has given me my joy back. The gifts of the program are a daily occurrence for me now. And being involved in couples meetings based on the pamphlet Recovering Together, Issues Faced by Couples has given me a chance to hear what I could not hear from my spouse: the struggle, isolation, and shame of the SA, which then gives me compassion I just didn't even know I was capable of. I've heard a summation of recovery as this: trust God, clean house, and serve others. When I remember this simple synopsis, I can stay connected to spirit, to myself, and to my loved ones in a way and to my loved ones in a way that simply wasn't possible before. For that, I am grateful, and for that, I can embrace my happy, joyful, and free dance. Thank you for listening.